from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
What hot and anxious folks out here at the ballpark. 3-2 to count. The pitch from Acevedo.
It's the G and Ursula Show off an amazing start to the weekend. Thanks to those Seattle Mariners. After 21 years, Ursula, they're going to the playoffs. Good morning.
Good morning. Can we just play that audio over and over again for 3 hours?
Good job,
we'll just
Nick.
Say,
yeah.
Good morning, Nick.
Let's go, M's, baby.
Well, we're going to have Rick Riz join us at 10:30 to talk about the M's first appearance in the playoffs in 21 years.
Uh-huh.
And we want to have him take us back to that very moment because, you know, if there's someone who has been through all the ups and downs and the many downs that involve the Seattle Mariners, that would be Rick Riz. So this was so sweet for all the diehard fans and even those of us who are bandwagon fans.
No doubt. Just that's me.
So, yeah, me too.
That's me.
We do have a super packed show coming up at 9:30. This mm-hmm. is a really troubling story, and it's actually a KUOW investigation. The question is, why is King County giving a convicted sex offender with fake credentials, a whole bunch of money to run a program that works with troubled kids? And I know this is a story that is just depressing to you, and it's just very troubling. We'll talk about that. As always, we want to connect with you. Our state roofing text line is 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
It's time to get the people with the woke. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
And yes, it happened. The Seattle Mariners broke their postseason drought with that walk-off home run from catcher Cal Raleigh on Friday night.
And the Mariners knocking on the door to a playoff appearance for the first time since 2001. Here's the stretch. The 3-2 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Stay fair. Holy smokes, he did it. Off the hidden air cafe. Cal Raleigh with a walk-off home run. How sweet it is.
And with that, the M's clinched that elusive wild card spot, ending the longest active playoff void in all of North American professional sports. Unfortunately, all the celebrating may have taken it out of the players because they did lose yesterday 10-3 against Oakland, but we're not going to focus on that. I want to hear from all of you right now, this morning. How are you feeling about our Mariners? How are you feeling about finally getting into the playoffs? Now we can say for sure. 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
I tried my best to put this into perspective, and I think that this is the best way that I can. I know that everybody is excited about the Mariners, even like you said, Ursula, even if you are a diehard fan or if you are a bandwagon fan like Ursula and I. And that's right. We are proud of it. We are the cousins that wait for you to win the lottery and come over and say, hey, cousin, that's us. But I first moved here in 1999. And I remember the year, okay, some Mariners, Ken Griffey Jr., you know, there's a lot of excitement. And I had known learned then, like, oh, yeah, they were just, everybody knew the 95 slide, so they were just in the playoffs in 95. And then we know what happened and when it got to the playoffs, and we saw what they did in 2000. And then they had that amazing year, first year of when Ichiro first got there. They win 116 games. This town was going nuts, Capitol Hill, everything was crazy, Queen Anne, all of that was just rocking during that time, right? So I'm moving here where baseball was good,
yes,
right? The Yankees beat them 2 years in a row and they didn't win. That's okay, don't worry, because they'll go back again. And then there was this drought for 21 years. Well, during the drought is when during that time I got to learn, like, oh, oh, you mean the Mariners really haven't been to the playoffs much at all? I thought that playoffs
that
was
just, yeah, yeah,
that was just
that,
what you
normal.
Do.
Yeah.
But when you put it into perspective,
yeah.
That it is crazy. So now, Ursula, your thoughts on 21 years, my friend.
Well, I just feel really good for the team. Just imagine having to always mention that this is the longest drought of any, not just baseball, but any professional team.
Right.
Just to have that monkey on your back the whole time.
Yes.
To be able to remove that, mm-hmm. I feel like, okay, it's just refreshing. It's the start, you know. I hope they go a long way in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I know that there's some people who are already, you know, making predictions that are not that favorable.
Right.
But just the fact that they got here, I think it's just a reset.
I agree.
And it's great. And it's great for this next generation. And we need this right now.
I just want to say.
We need something really positive.
Ursula, we keep making fun of us being bandwagons.
Yeah.
But let's be real. The other two on this show
yeah.
are cringing.
Yes.
Because they are real diehard fans.
Yes, exactly.
And I just want to give them
yes.
love. Chef, you're a diehard fan. Nick, you guys are diehard fans. You actually took a picture together at the stadium, and you guys look like the movie Step Brothers. But anyways...
Okay, well, I'm not as diehard of a fan as Nick. Ursula, I just want to broaden the appeal beyond sports, though, to the folks that don't necessarily care about the Mariners and say, if you care about people coming back to downtown Seattle,
yes.
it's not the businesses that are going to bring them back. It is apparently the Mariners. So you can be happy for all the businesses down there.
There you go. And Nick, how are you feeling this morning?
Well, the fact that now... my generation has an opportunity to create memories in the postseason. You've mentioned since 2001. And to mention, Chef and I were texting each other during the game. He's like, are you watching right now? I'm like, absolutely. And we were debating Cal Raleigh, one of the greatest Mariner moments. Is it up there as one of the greatest Seattle sports moments, though?
Oh, he's instantly a legend in my book.
And that
instantly.
Is a great question, and I want to hear from all of you. 888-973-5476. Is that moment one that is going to be forever embedded, like, you know, the Ken Griffey Jr.?
No, it's not going to be.
Why not? It's because...
You set me up. Chef set me up. He asked me the question in a different way. Hearing Nick ask it that way, will it be the most memorable? And it's going
one
to...
One of?
Do I think it's going to be one of? No. I don't think... 10 years from now, people will know who the person was that hit the home run. But you do still know who the, when I say the tip, when it comes to the Seahawks, you know who that was involved. When I say Beastquake, you know what that's involved. When we say 95 and Slide, we know what that's involved.
Okay.
I don't know that that home run will be known.
But are you clouded?
The longest drought in all of professional
yes.
sports ends with that swing. You cannot say there's been a larger moment in like the last 5 years, and certainly not in the last 20.
But
the
Seahawks, I mean, excuse me, but the Mariners were still one game away, and so they had a bunch of games to do it. I'm not trying
okay.
to.
I think you're showing your bias because you're
right.
much more of a football person.
Fair.
So for baseball
Fair.
People, this was gigantic.
Okay.
Okay, you heard in Heather's newscast, all schools in Aberdeen are closed this morning because of a threat that was posted to social media. And according to the district, the threatening message was posted late Saturday night on one of Aberdeen High School's social media accounts. It was deleted the next day. We're also just learning today about a totally separate incident, but this involved a report of a man with a gun at Pacific Lutheran University last Wednesday. Campus safety had called 911, but we're finding out that it took Pierce County Sheriff's deputies an hour and 20 minutes to respond to the school, and the department tells Fox 13 News that when South Sound 911 sent out the broadcast, apparently there were no available deputies. And South Sound 911 says also that the broadcast did not have an alert tone signaling that it was an emergency, but they say they are reviewing what went wrong to see what changes can be made in the future.
Now, Ursula, I was going to come unglued a little bit, and I was going to say, oh my goodness, the Pierce County deputies were not there. Where is the lack of communication, and why is there a lack of communication in this time? But Scott Hamill, the deputy director of support services, like you just said, that's what stands out to me. Scott Hamill, again, deputy director of support services for South Sound 911. He says that when the broadcast first went out on dispatch, they were unaware of the lockdown. And so basically what they're saying is we could have or should have done was to provide an additional radio broadcast update to let the units in the area know the campus was in lockdown. So basically South Sound 911, is holding the bag on this. There it is. They did not alert and do what they were supposed to do, according to what Scott himself said in this quote.
Yeah, which is worrisome. The State Patrol says this guy who had that gun mm-hmm. near the campus was apparently running away from a hit and run that happened just a couple of blocks away. So there was a man with a gun. He was allegedly carrying an AR-15. The car he was driving was stolen. So in that case, they're very lucky that nothing went wrong, but
sure.
Certainly an hour and 20 minutes should not be the response time when you're talking about someone armed potentially hurting people at a big campus. Speaking of violence, it was an extremely violent weekend in Seattle. Shortly after midnight Saturday in the University District, gunshots hit four bystanders when a barroom brawl spilled onto a sidewalk near 43rd and University Way in the U District. Cairo 7 TV's Bridget Chapman talked with witnesses at the scene.
Three shootings within 2 hours.
We were just hanging out inside the bar, and next thing we hear is like five gunshots going off. It's like, bah, bah, bah.
Seattle police responded to the first scene around 1 a.m. in the University District. Ivan Avila tells us he saw a man fall to the ground.
His leg is literally like snapped completely off. It's like the bone that completely snapped off. It looked like a soccer player injury.
He ran over and used his belt as a tourniquet.
I wrapped it around his leg because he was bleeding so much.
Police say four people were hurt, but their injuries are not life-threatening.
Okay, that was a chaotic scene. On Saturday, though, police also say a driver who was speeding away from a shooting at 41st in Brooklyn hit and killed a 21-year-old man. They're still looking for that driver. And then in the International District, a shooting early Sunday left nearly 30 shell casings on the ground. Four cars, two buildings damaged by gunfire. And then minutes later in Pioneer Square, a man trying to break up a fight near 2nd and Yesler was shot in the leg. I mean, I'm even losing track of all the different shootings we're talking about. But here is Seattle Police Detective Patrick Michaud.
It remains a very safe city. Comparatively to similar-sized cities in the United States. That being said, we do take every single one of these shootings extraordinarily seriously.
So far, police have not made any arrests in any of these cases.
Did you spend your weekend in Seattle this weekend, Ursula?
I sure did.
How was your weekend?
It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. I went to Golden Gardens yesterday, but why do you ask?
Because I spent my weekend in Seattle this weekend. Ask me how it was.
How was your weekend?
Beautiful. Started off, yeah, of course, you had on Friday night. What happened there? We led off the show with the beauty that happened here in Seattle. That happened down at T-Mobile Park. There were fans there that could not leave. They wanted to stay in the stadium and see how amazing it was. You had everything that centered around on Friday night, so everything was glorious. I talked to some people that says it was one of the best nights that they ever had in Seattle. You had your beautiful weekend, and then you had my beautiful weekend, which was capped off by the Base to Space event that I did at the Space Needle. I was at the Space Needle from 6:30 in the morning until 4 o'clock p.m. yesterday, and it was so beautiful. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, because all of the amazing stories, which probably 95% of all stories that happened in Seattle this weekend will not get talked about. It's only going to be the 5%, the ugliness that's going on. Yes. Is crime going up? Crime is going up all over the country. But compare where Seattle is to the rest of the country. I will take Seattle every day of the week, including on Sunday.
And I appreciate you saying that. And as someone who lives in the city, I agree. I would take Seattle. But I think both things can be true. We could have had a beautiful weekend. You experienced a great weekend. I experienced a great weekend. But there are a bunch of people in the U District who were just at a bar, and then this brawl spills out, and then suddenly gunshots, are fired and bystanders are hit. Mm-hmm. That's a big concern. I mean, that's not – I go to the U District all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who does frequent that area, if I'm a business owner or someone who is just going to one of those restaurants,
right.
I don't want to be there when something breaks out like that. Or the person who was hit while a car is fleeing the area.
Yeah.
Again, yes, relatively speaking, maybe it's not as bad as you can believe given the headlines. Mm. But it's still problematic.
But you have to admit, though, on a daily basis here in this area, we are led to believe that Seattle is so bad. And here's how I know it's not so bad. You want to know how I know? Because housing prices are through the roof. That's number one. Number two, there is not a mass exodus of people that are saying, I am getting rid of my home in Seattle and I am getting out of this place. So there is something. It's one thing to have opinion, but there is nothing that shows me that crime is so dangerous in Seattle that is making people want to leave. I'd argue to tell you that the majority of Seattle is absolutely beautiful.
If you want to get actual data on this, because I'm looking it up this morning, okay, where does Seattle rank for homicide rate in Washington State? Let's see, 4.31 per 100,000 residents. That's good for 28th. Yakima is at 31.2. Tacoma is second at 17.3. Like, look, Edmonds, Mount Lake Terrace, Mount Vernon, Covington, Union Gap, Steilacoom, Lakewood, they're all way ahead of Seattle over the last 20 years, and including currently. So we hear a lot about Seattle, but you never hear anyone in a small town say, like, there's a gun violence problem in Edmonds. What is going on with Edmonds leadership that they have not fixed it yet?
Yeah. Great points.
Mount Lake Terrace has a higher homicide rate than Seattle.
Yeah, but love all your points, but it still was a really
bad weekend.
In Seattle, yes. And quite frankly, again, I'm just happy I wasn't in the U District when all this went down. Okay, we got to just mention one more thing. We have to talk about the weather.
Good day, sunshine.
I got to end on a positive note. Come on. It was such a glorious day in the Puget Sound region yesterday. Temperatures hitting a record 80 degrees, and we could get that warm again today. That would match the record that was set back in 1993.
Tell the people, Ursula. Tell the people about your homeboy you know that always been telling you about the best time of the year here in Seattle. Go ahead.
You always say fall is your favorite weather, but you say it's because of cuddle time. This is not cuddling weather. This is summer weather.
Yes, it is.
Yesterday, I went to Golden Gardens. There were people playing. It was beach volleyball. People were water. So Golden Gardens.
That don't scream nothing but cuddling. You take somebody to Golden Gardens after that, you cuddling after.
Okay, I just want you to know, though, that the forecast says there's no rain until October 10th. And I just enjoy this now. Even if you're someone who just loves fall and you're like, where is my fall or where's my winter? Meteorologists say we're going to have our third La Nina year in a row. So starting November, it's going to be colder and wetter. So enjoy this right now. How's that?
You're talking about 9:30 by yourself.
Yes. Coming up.
Man.
Why has a convicted sex offender been getting money from King County to run a program for troubled kids? You have to hear this story, and we'll have details coming up next. Much for joining us on the G and Ursula Show. And this next story is from KUOW. It's an investigation, and I have to say it's just a very troubling story. And the question for all of you is, who is in charge of King County programs aimed at reducing gun violence? According to this investigation, one of the programs is run by a convicted sex offender with fake credentials. Salim Robinson runs Renegades for Life Youth Outreach. It's one of 11 organizations that get money from Seattle and King County to prevent gun violence. You hear about these disruptors and people when you're looking at alternatives to jail. It's like, what can you do to prevent some of these crimes from happening in the first place? And so there are these groups that are working on that. KUOW reports that until last year, Robinson was also on the sex offender registry for public masturbation. He's been convicted of that crime twice. He also claims to have a psychology degree from UW and a master's in social work from Seattle University. It turns out neither claim is true. Another disturbing fact, no background check was done to verify either his education credentials or his criminal history. Next month, he's going to go on trial for insurance fraud. And even with all of these red flags and all these things that have been uncovered, Renegades for Life Youth Outreach got a more than $260,000 subcontract last year to work with youth impacted by gun violence. And, gee, I know that as you read the story, you were getting more and more frustrated. And I wanted to get into that. I mean, first of all, just reading this to me, it's just like, where is, first of all, how did this happen? Where is the oversight? And you want to know why people are dubious and reluctant to give money to these kinds of groups and to try different things if you know that you're giving it blank checks and no one's checking to see what is being done?
Every question you just asked is something that you have every right to ask, Ursula. And every question you just ask is what everyone is asking right now. And the reason why you guys hear it in my voice, why I'm so upset about this, and the reason why it was so hard reading this story, because first, let me comment this on this. This is awful. And this is only going to make it harder for the organizations out there that really want to do good. And what's going to happen is the regulations are now going to be more stringent for those that want to make a difference. I've been telling Ursula and Chef, if there's one thing in me getting in this philanthropic world, I can see things a little different. I thought when I went to auctioneer school, Ursula, that I would just do a couple pie sales. You know what I mean? I would do an auctioneer for a school.
There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money that gets thrown around.
There's a lot of money out there with very few control over it. And what's happening is let's say King County, for example, finds an organization and they want to do good. And these organizations are out there doing good. And so, bam, they're doing this. And it doesn't matter. It could be all over the state, not just King County, all over. So the county, the government gives money to the organization. Well, the organization is contracting others to help them out. So that's where the vetting process doesn't happen so well. Now what's going to happen now, Ursula, is now when government is like, you know what? You guys made us look bad. So now we're going to have to vet everything that happens now. Which
should have been happening in the first place.
You're right. But I was telling you, I've been telling you guys this. I've been saying, Ursula, Chef, there's way too much money going out here and very little control. And I've been talking about this for some time.
And okay, I want to get into a few more details here. So just so you know that Seattle and King County spend nearly $6 million on this collective called the Regional Peacekeepers Collective. Okay. And it's 11 different organizations like Salim Robinson's that the goal is to be on the front line of these community groups. Again, these are people, in some cases, they may have criminal histories themselves. The idea is, hey, they know how to reach out to troubled youth, or they know they have connections and they are able to reach at a level that maybe traditional law enforcement could not. Mm-hmm. I mean, and already, again, we know that every police department is needing to, you know, be beefed up right now all across the country and especially around here. So, you know, trying to find these different ways and maybe different strategies to fight violence. Mm-hmm. And that's all fine and dandy. But again, I mean, I'm almost as hacked off, or maybe even more hacked off, at King County for not having those things in place. I mean, do you remember after George Floyd and the city of Seattle gave, was it a $10 million, just a big check to a bunch of groups? And again, it's this reaction to something, and there may be, you know, there's likely a necessity for this, but again, when you just throw money at it and say I'm doing something about it, And then there's no, I mean, we laugh about the term dashboard, but there needs to be some way to track what is it that you're doing with the money? What is our intended goal? What are the metrics we're using to see whether this is successful before we give it more money?
Right. And usually what happens, most of the time, things are done right. It's like, I love my analogies, and it's like being in the company lunchroom, and all the time there are donuts for everyone in the company. And then one day someone comes in and takes all the donuts, and nobody else gets anything. And then the company says, you know what? We're now done with just supplying all the donuts because one person messed it up for everyone. And right. In this case right here, there's one person who, I mean, Chef was explaining to telling me about this person and is currently on facing trial right now for insurance fraud.
Yeah,
currently right now. I mean, here's
another one. Here's even more. I didn't even get into all of it.
Go ahead.
Okay, so they claim that they have expertise in youth and family counseling. They claim to provide youth mentoring, after school programs, street outreach, housing services, support for victims of sex and labor trafficking. But this is this is from KUOW. Renegade's youth job skills training involves unpaid pre-apprenticeships, cleaning office buildings and residential complexes through Robinson's ex-wife's cleaning service. I mean, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And my question now, and I think everyone's going to be asking, well, if this is happening with this group, what's happening to the other groups and organizations?
And okay. And I believe that that's a fair question. And when you ask that question, make sure you do all the groups throughout the state of Washington. Because let me just say this. This ain't the first time that this has happened. This isn't the first time that groups have gotten money and maybe the vetting process was not good. And I think, Ursula, every question that you ask, I think those are legitimate. And I believe King County, definitely in this story, because King County obviously let the money go and it wasn't on them to do the vetting process. I bet you they will do the vetting process now and it will now become more stringent. All of these rules now are going to be tougher. So for the organizations that are trying to do good, there's a good chance that you won't get some of these because of stories like this. Yeah. And this is why I'm sad, because the true people that are boots on the ground in these communities and neighborhoods that actually know what's happening. No, I'm not talking about the organizations like, oh, we're just trying to help out people that are less fortunate. And then you have your organization, your party, your gala, and you have the little black kids on there, and you want to go ahead and show the world how much you're doing. But we have real boots on the ground in these communities that will probably not get the money because of the safeguards that are going to be put in place. So this is why, truly, that this story makes me want to cry, because I know what this means now. It's going to be tougher. I'm sorry for getting emotional about this, but I am so upset because they will use this example and say, this won't happen again.
Or they'll use this example as a reason to have some safeguards, and then the other groups will be able to do their business and know that there are safeguards in place so that they won't be accused of something.
Yeah.
And they can show that they're on the up and up. I mean, there can be a positive out of this, but my opinion, I mean, we need to have follow up and find out whose head is going to be rolling because of this.
Sure. You're right, Ursula. Hey, coming up next, I think we finally, Ursula's been teaching me a lot about news. And so the story that's going to come up next is, I keep asking, why is this news? And Ursula has to say, well, it is news because it involves a Seahawks star wide receiver and a cart ride on a sideline.
It'll be an uncomfortable discussion.
We'll do that next, she and Ursula. It's G and Ursula, everybody. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we got to have a discussion. Tiffany Smiley, you know, she's running for Senate there against Patty Murray. Well, find out what happens when basically her campaign targets a few corporations here in this state. We'll talk about that at 10. But right now, why did DK Metcalf get carted off the field on Sunday? And I need to find out why this is news. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask Ursula about that in a second. But early in the fourth quarter of yesterday's win, Sunday's win, actually, over the Detroit Lions, DK Metcalf left the field, right, on a trainer's cart, leaving Seahawk fans wondering, what happened? He get injured? Well, turns out he had a tummy ache. In the locker rooms were too far away for him to make it, even though DK runs a 4.3340.
I was hurting. That's it. I had a little tummy ache. I had to get it taken care of. I was going to jog off the field myself, and then, you know, Strick was like, we got a cart for you. And I was like, hey, might as well. So when I was on the cart, I was thinking, like, yeah, it was a good thing we had the cart on standby. I don't even like taking the cart, but in that situation, I give myself a pass.
I'm disappointed in you.
Why? Snickering?
No.
Just like a grade schooler?
I'm disappointed because this topic was a suggestion by Chef. And in the notes, Chef goes, this topic is going to probably get vetoed by Ursula. And then you this morning, you're like, oh, this is news. Yes. I'm so shocked with you.
I'm looking at it right now. Seattle Times. New York Post, TMZ. Okay, Seattle Times might be the only Sports Illustrated, Yahoo. It's all over the place. Of course. Of course it's news because everyone saw it. And anyone who was watching the game yesterday saw him getting carted off, and you're like, was he injured? No, he had a tummy ache.
I admit to finding this hilarious.
Sorry.
Imagine your bathroom emergency becoming national news.
That's what I'm saying.
Look, so, and as you said, he can run really fast.
Yes.
But here's the other thing. Okay. I've always wondered, like, I know that players are on the field even when they're not 100% and they're not feeling good. And if you have a bathroom emergency and you know those situations where you're like, I'm not sure I'm going to make it 50 feet. Yeah. How far is the locker room? He needed the cart because it would have taken like several minutes. And then the goal would be to get him back onto the field as quickly as possible. So you want to resolve that tummy ache as fast as possible so that he can make the next series of... But everyone saw it. Everyone was wondering what it was. People are talking about it. So that is news.
Ursula, I'm just so disappointed in you. You know what? I have rubbed off on you too much. We. This is Cairo Radio, where it's the news of hard-hitting news right here, and we're talking about this. So does this mean that the next time, Ursula, that we see someone on a cart going to the locker room, that we are now going to say, okay, didn't look like he got injured. Oh, you know what? He's probably going, okay. And then let's not have it be a story. Is that fair? And by the way,
Twitter, though, went nuts. DK Metcalf with the first ever poop mobile to the locker room.
360 says, G, you're right. What's newsworthy about a wide receiver running a sidewalk out route?
DK Metcalf is out to use the bathroom, and his return is probable. I mean, they're... Okay, come on. You need some levity.
Hey, the commercial break lasted a little longer because, right? That's normal. All right. Good stuff, Ursula. Way to bring the funny to the show. Hey, we talk about Tiffany Smiley next, and we'll talk about the notices that she got for her campaign ads. And so we'll be discussing that next on the G and Ursula Show.